Everyone, welcome to More Than Meets These Guys. This podcast is usually a journey through the original series of Transformers, but this time we are going to start something different. We're going to change it up as we go into season three of Transformers. We are going to be trading off with Ed's favorite show and something he requested a long time ago. And I apologize for just getting around to doing this alternation. This is going to be devoted to Robotech. One of the other pillars of our childhood as far as shows. And really, I think you would agree with me, this is probably one of the first shows, cartoons, I say cartoon really lightly, shows that we really dealt with death.
I think it was. And also, in a bizarrely sideways fashion, is actually tangentially related to Transformers in a lot of ways that we'll touch on in the future. But yeah, like you said, I think the plan is to at least do the Macross saga, the first part of it, and alternate with season three of Transformers, especially since we're at a stopping point, since we finished season two and we're gonna do the movie. Also, I mean, there's probably gonna be some differences in the way we tackle these, since a lot of times I like to delve into the writers and the production of the of Transformers episodes. Can't really do that with Robotech due to the nature of the way it was made. We are going to go into a lot of the behind the scenes stuff on the importing and the editing and all that kind of thing. Not now, because if I started in on that, that would be like a 6-part podcast by itself. So I'm gonna hit on that on the next thing, because it definitely has a saga of its own that's just as complicated and litigious, we'll say, as some other stuff. But so but I figure, since that we're going into a new series, though, I mean, let's what are you guys' personal histories with this? I mean, I'll touch on mine after you're done, but I don't know, you guys want to, I mean, how'd you get into it? What's your did was it a thing when you were a kid? What was the deal?
Jay?
It's funny. With Transformers, it's very, because I was a very early adopter to that, so it's very easy for me to remember where I was when this happened, sort of thing. With Robotech, I don't think I was there from the beginning. I know I definitely started like the Macross stuff about halfway through, and I don't even know if that was during the first broadcast of it, so I'm not really sure. But I do know a big thing that loomed on it when I watched it was the Odell factor. My grandpa Odell, who I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house as a child, and Odell was a roofer, so when he would get home was variable. And he had very specific ideas about entertainment. For instance, he did not like comedy as a concept. He said that hee-hee-ha-ha stuff was not real life.
But strangely, did he enjoy hee-haw, though?
Oh, he loved hee-haw.
I was going to say, yeah, thank you, thank you.
I was very picky about what I would be have Odell catch me watching. And you guys know I love soap operas. Odell was never going to get home before 3, so he was never going to catch me watching soap operas. Odell had kind of a beef with G.I. Joe that was really arbitrary, which was he did not like that they were called G.I. Joe. His belief was G.I. Joe was a term for all soldiers. So there shouldn't be a branch of the military called G.I. Joe.
You know, my grandfather had an issue with He-Man being called Masters of the Universe, because he said that only God was the master of the universe, and that some dude couldn't be the master of the universe. But anyway, go ahead. I don't.
It's funny you mentioned that, because from very early on, I didn't like the He-Man cartoon at all. The lore I had made up in my head for something called Masters of the Universe was just a lot heavier than like what was on that show. I was super into Transformers. usually I'd get to watch Transformers before Odell would get home. But then when I discovered Robotech, that was like Transformers meets a soap opera. And so I was very on board for this, but it was one that I was terrified for Odell to see a second of. So, and it, I, if I remember correctly, it came on at 4:30. So there was a very good chance he would come home during it. So a lot of my memories of this is very clipped because I would be looking, have one eye looking out the window, see his truck coming around the corner, and then, you know, we've switched to a different channel. We're watching a game show or something. So that's really mostly what I remember about my history of with Robotech.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was one of those things where I knew people who were really into it, and I was into Transformers. That I almost feel like it came on the same time as like Transformers, maybe when Transformers like repeated on WGN or something.
Right.
And when I was younger, actually, I wouldn't go to I after school care called, God, is it Kinder World? It was like a local owned one that was over in like kind of over, God, by off of off of 9th Avenue, kind of close to Burgess and all that. Anyway, so my afternoons, you know, both my parents worked. I'd spend some time there, and I was too far away to be a latchkey kid. And they had always had the one TV, and you always get to choose what you're watching. And of course, everyone complained whenever there was a Braves game on because you couldn't watch, you know, things on TBS. So yeah, or on WGN when the Cubs were playing, same
Right.
thing. Yep, same
Harry
thing.
Carey.
So yeah, and you only had so many things you could watch. So I usually didn't get to see Robotech. Like I'd catch some of it, and I was so confused whenever I saw something on it. And whenever I did catch it, I was hoping I'd catch it during some like some Veritech battle, but it's always during some soap opera adjacent
Right,
thing.
right.
So I never really got into it, but I knew of the stuff and I knew how cool everything was. And not to take anything away from Veritex, I had Jetfire, and the Veritex looked like they're more plastic and they looked cheaper, but they had the cool skull and crossbones for
Right.
Skull Squadron. So it was a kind of a weird dynamic with all that. But yeah, and I had friends who, man, they read the novels. They collected toys. They were playing like as I got older, they were playing the tabletop RPGs and stuff. So there was a lot of I was parallel to a lot of Robotech, but I really never got into it until I was older and actually could sit there and watch some of the show.
You know, you mentioned Jetfire. It is funny what in the days when you just didn't have access to all the information on Earth, what you'd just roll with. Like, you know, like that you had a Jetfire toy, but he didn't look like Jetfire or Skyfire in the comics or the show, but he did look like this thing from this new show. And I was just like, okay. That's fine. That makes sense to me. You know, well, how did I accept that is what I don't understand.
We accepted a lot when we were kids. It was just like a
Right.
lot easier just to accept random stuff.
Right. Well, just I think it's because you knew you didn't have a way to find out why this is like this. So it's like, okay,
Yeah.
well, I'm just gonna deal with this then.
Yeah, some of our younger listeners may not understand how you couldn't just go on your phone and Google information. You had to hear from the kid on the playground who was usually wrong. And then you heard about lead in the paint of Voltron lions. And
Right.
here we are. There's a whole thing later. That's how we found out about stuff. So, yeah, I mean, you
So
were
many
kind
urban myths about that stuff too. I remember like tons and tons of these theories that were going around for why that was back in the day. But that's something that we're gonna touch on that though. That's something that can you could do multiple episodes on the licensing and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so for me though, I have a really backwards history with this fandom though, and because I strangely this show was the last thing that I interacted with, and by a very long margin. Because and like in Transformers episodes, I've talked about the kid that was my neighbor that called Devastator Devastor.
Yes.
The kid that he just
Legendary.
mispronounced everything. Yeah, he mispronounced all this stuff. Jason McKinley was his name. tried to find him on social media recently, and I can't find him. But I haven't seen him since I
He knows
came.
you're talking about him, so that's
He
fine.
probably does. So shoot me a line, buddy.
It's the faster.
But he was the first kid I knew that knew anything about Robotech because he moved away at some point in like 86. I think it was in 86, 85 or 86. He moved away. He moved to like Birmingham or something like that. And he came back a few weeks later, I guess with his family to get more of their stuff from their house. And he was just like, dude, you've got to see this show called Robotech. It's so good. He's like, here, I brought a toy from it. And like all he had was just like was the Cyclone, like
Oh,
the motorcycle. Like
yeah.
with no rider, it didn't transform or anything like that. Because like this is a thing, because and this is a common theme with Robotech toys, is they're the most disappointing toy line of all time. Like
Hey.
nothing good, very little good came from the Robotech toys. But he had just this, and I was like, he's like, dude, it's so good, man. You gotta see it, man. Look at this thing. And I was like, bro, this is like a seafoam green Street Hawk you're bringing me. This is like Sonny Crockett's motorcycle. Like I don't
Right.
want this. I have no need for this. I'm going back to G.I. Joe and pro wrestling. I don't want anything to do with this.
Right.
So I'm not long after that though, I moved. And I moved over to Pensacola and the big city, because it was massive compared to where I was from.
Yeah.
But every kid in middle school was just like, dude, you've got to see Robotech. And they made it sound cool. Like if you need some pitch men, you get up with these dudes I knew in middle
Right.
school because they pitched it right. They were like, oh, dude, people get killed and jets and transform. And I'm like, well, this sounds cool. And which basically they pitched it as like G.I. Joe meets Transformers, which is essentially the best way to pitch this.
Right.
But for some reason, I think that we had a TV that didn't get the channel that like we didn't have the right UHF antenna or something like that, which was a common theme in my life.
Well,
So,
and that's the thing with TV back then that definitely the kids won't understand is even a station you got, some days you didn't.
yeah,
Like if the weather was weird, you just didn't get
wouldn't get it
Channel 15.
right, or
No
the
Transformers
TV in
that day.
the TV in the back of the house might get
Right,
it.
exactly. The TV in the back of the house might get it if you stand on the bed and hold the antenna.
Right, exactly, which was a weird thing, but I still just never saw this show, and so like, but eventually in like ninth grade, I had like a weird like math block where I had math for 2 hours straight, and I had one of the kids that I knew in middle school was in that class with me, and we spent a lot of time playing Star Frontiers and Dungeons and Dragons in class because we would just get all of our work done on Monday and then play in the game the rest of the week. But we'd go to the library, and he was like, "Oh my God, they have a whole section of Robotech novels here." And I was like, oh, cool. So like I checked them all out and I read every one of those novels. And I was like, these are good. Like these are real, this is real. Now I get it. But I had
Right.
zero visual reference other than the paintings on the cover. And I was like, oh, okay, well that's Talon Jetfire and whatever. But like and coming to the novels, like Evan, you mentioned the novels, and there's a lot of controversy over those novels, and we're going to have to touch on that in another episode because there's a lot of layers going on here, man. But on their own, they're pretty good, and they're also very good for that time and for like that age of somebody where there's not a whole lot else out there like that, which was cool. But here comes a sequence of events that really defined like a lot of the rest of my life here. So this is why I love this. So I was riding the bus home. I had one of those novels, and this kid that I kind of knew and like I traded comics with sometimes was like, "Oh, like Robotech." And I was like, "Yeah, it's pretty cool." And we talked about it for a while, and he was like, "Oh, so like my older brother has the role playing game." And I was like, there's a tabletop role playing game about this. Oh, and I was rabid. Like I had to, because as big a fan as I was of playing like D&D and Marvel superheroes and Star Frontiers, I was like, I have to see this. Because like I was like, this is a thing. Like there's non I knew about non D&D RPGs, but I was like, I gotta see this. So like, a couple of days later, his brother, him and his brother come over to my house and we play, and I was like, this is awesome. I am so bought into this. This is so cool. I was super excited. So his brother was older. He was like a fireman or something like that. And so he was like, hey, I don't have time for this anymore. So here he's like, I'm just because since you love these, I'm just gonna give you these books. You can have all of my role-playing books, and as long as you just let me play when I have time. And I was like, man, thank you so much. That was awesome. But But see, here's the thing, though. So we start playing with other kids, like in the neighborhood and stuff, and it was cool. We had a good time. But some people say that, like, man, the first time I heard the first Ramones album, or like the first time I saw Star Wars, or when I saw like Sonic Youth on Michelob Night Music or something like that. There's like, that was a transformative moment in my life. And those were all transformative moments in my life too. But this is like this is like a year later. I was in 10th grade. So I had the book, and I was in my Spanish class. And this skinny kid with shaggy hair looks over and he goes, "Oh, dude, you like Rulotech?" And I'm like, "Yeah, man." And dude, this dude, the rest of the class, he would not shut up about Robotech. And he was like, "Dude, I lived in Texas and I saw Robotech the movie." And I'm like, "No, you did. There's no Robotech the movie." And it turns out there wasn't Robotech the movie. And he was one of like 100 people that saw it in the theater when he was a kid. But he was like, "Dude, I have all these toys." And I was like, "This is in high school, and this is when it's not cool to talk about what toys you have. In the 90s, you didn't talk about like owning toys." So he went on and on about this. I was like, "This kid's like legit." And but he started playing with us, and then like but keep in mind that like so at this like we had played years of the continuity in the role-playing game at this point. We had like a whole like squad of people in this game, and I still had never seen the show. I had read all the novels, I'd read the comics at this point, I had played the game, I knew essentially everything about the that you could know. And I had not seen a single episode until the Sci-Fi Channel started showing Robotech on Sci-Fi Cartoon Quest. And so that friend, oh, dude. So his dad had a satellite dish. And so he just recorded all this stuff on a VHS. So I had a really janky VHS collection of it by the time I was in like 12th grade. So that was how I got into it. And as a fun side note, I know a lot of times on this show, I talk about like the people I went to school with, people I knew back in the day, and how they're all like Alex Jones preppers and all this kind of stuff. Oh, dude, kid to this day is my best friend. So,
All right on.
like Robotech is the reason that he and I are friends. So, and so I'm like, and that I think that's why it that's probably why it has a big, a big thing for me. But yeah, so that's how I got to Robotech. And sorry that was so long, because that's a
No,
that's a that's yeah.
that's fascinating that you had read all the no, because I mean, this is a real visual thing, you know? It's crazy that you just got into the lore.
And the thing is, the novels are like, I mean, you can make the case that they take the cartoon and just delve more into certain aspects of it, but like there's times where it departs completely, and it's like they just made stuff up, and like they and that that's why those novels are kind of controversial, and they're not really accepted as S tier canon or whatever garbage, designation you want to give them. They were I thought they were good. I've read a few of them in the last few years, and they're fine. The guys that wrote them were it was actually two guys writing under one name. One of them was Brian Daley, who wrote the really early Star Wars novel sequels, like
Oh,
the
okay.
so Han Solo at Star's End and all that stuff. Those guys wrote a lot of later Star Wars stuff too. So, they were like legit writers, and but they had a cool style, and but yeah, that I agree though, because that was the thing, is like, because it's based on toy, but on cool things, and like I had like I said, I was reading these books, and they're just describing fighters, and I'm like, cool, it's a plane that turns into a robot. I have no idea what it looks like. So.
I gotta interrupt real quick. Jay, you have the exact same pattern and color pattern Afghan behind you that I had grown up in, that I miss that thing to this day.
It screams comfort, doesn't it?
It does.
It
I
just
remember having that same color pattern, same pattern Afghan, and I'm like, man, I miss that. I actually told my mom recently, like, hey, if you ever get rid of that, save it for me. I'll come get it. I just want to like lay on the couch with it, because it's what it is. Anyway, sorry. So anyone who doesn't understand, watch the YouTube. That's actually no. That means a lot though, because honestly, we kind of formed our friendships out of a shared interests. That's how it really was. So yeah, I totally get that. And by the way, those are Palladium or Robotech books, right?
I still have them on my shelf over there.
Yeah, I've
Fallen
got
Order.
I've only had the Southern Cross book myself, and God, I miss when Palladium was easy before Rifts. Anyways, yeah, move
So yeah,
on.
but yeah, but we'll get into every aspect that we touched on there, like as far as the importing and the like the licensing issues and the cartoons, the novels, the role playing games. Those all have all kinds of controversy and stories behind them, and we'll get into those in subsequent episodes. But for now, let's go ahead and just talk about episode one, Booby Trap.
Yeah, man.
Man, first of all, let's just say, is this the best intro ever? It's got to at least be a contender.
I love this intro. I at some point I watched the original Japanese version, and it I watched like the first like 5 or 6 episodes of the original Japanese version, and it made me appreciate how good the music is in the Japanese version, and how but it exposed how limited the music is in Robotech as opposed to Macross or whatever. But like it's essentially like as they beat it over your head, this music was composed by Upio Minucci. But I guess they paid him for 4 pieces of music, and they used those same 4 pieces of music over and over and over again.
They
So they
did.
have that dramatic music. They have that. They have
There's
like
the screechy violin one.
the right. Yeah, they have
Yeah,
that. They have
there's
the
the
triumphant
battle
one.
jazz.
Right.
No,
Yeah, they have that. And,
I gotta say
No,
though,
I
this is.
loved it that they use it over and over. It's a big
Oh
part of
yeah.
my memory with this.
I
After
do. The episodes though, it's you're like, oh my God, like yeah, like it's okay. I get it. I get it.
It's more like here comes the we know something's about the bad's about to happen because that one set of music came in or something controversial in the show is gonna happen.
Right.
No, I always though, I love the intro to this. I will always love the intro, like dun 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 dun, dun. It's almost like when this music from Star Wars started up, but like on a smaller scale, it's
Right.
so recognizable. I don't, you know, if I hear those bars, I instantly I know, you know, where I was, that age and stuff. So yeah, speaking of music, yeah.
But the montage itself, it has like kind of like a Top Gun kind of vibe too, of all the the dudes like jumping into these fighters and launching off these decks and stuff. It was like you know I agree. This is a great intro. And as we'll get to, I think the intro may be a better intro to the show than this show was to the series. But that's the little that'll come later on. But so yeah, the intro is the intro is super rad. You get this look at all these cool characters and fancy haircuts and cool ships and giant spaceships and transforming fighters and all this stuff. I don't think I don't.
And
I
Jetfire.
Jetfire, yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong though. I don't think that the later stuff was in this intro. This intro has just Macross stuff, right?
Yeah, just Macross. I know I've got a DVD I got years ago of I think of the first like few episodes of Robotech, and it had the full intro with all the like the Southern Cross stuff and the New Generation stuff, the Mos Pietà, whatever's how it's pronounced. Yeah, all the stuff all together in the intro. I'm like, oh, this kind of ruins it though, because you're watching it for the Macross part of it.
I think that's the later intro. I think because I had an original like old VHS of the Mos Pietah stuff, and it had the full because I think in every generation of Robotech they updated the intro to include the stuff from that one and the previous ones.
I believe you're right.
I think, but yeah, good open. But yeah, we get the but we get a cool open with a narrator. This narrator is really good too. I really like the narrator because he definitely conveys what's going on. Because if this guy was not here, you would be lost the entire. You'd be completely lost.
He doesn't have as good a voice as the Transformer narrator guy, though.
Yeah.
That guy's got the best voice. Here was the first issue I had with it. When we're introduced to when the spaceship land crash lands, it says that it's 1999, but how am I supposed to believe it's 1999 if no one's complaining about there hasn't been that Pinkerton was 3 years ago and there hasn't been a new Weezer record? Continuity.
That is a complete point of time. Here's a
God.
fun fact. So the spaceship that crash lands, this is an alien. This is this ship from somewhere. It's a giant mile-long spaceship crashes on an island in the South Pacific, an uninhabited island in the South Pacific. This is a that's an important point. Keep that in mind. Second,
Three quarter
originally,
mile long, by the way.
what's up?
It's a three quarter
Three quarter
mile
mile long,
long.
right? So a ship's called the SDF-1 or the Super Dimensional Fortress 1. The original name for the original designation for this was the Alien Spaceship 1 or Ass 1.
No notes.
You can find merch. You can find Ass 1 merch, actually.
Yeah. Well, we do this whole time warp thing, and they show the ship after it's crash landed, like the town that ends up on Macross Island or Macross Island, depends on how you want to say it. Your mileage may vary, and then it shows this town building built up around it, so you have an entire city, and then the ship being retrofitted to it looks very anglicized spaceship. It looks like aircraft carriers with a bridge from an aircraft carrier on it.
Yeah, I definitely got Earth-sized. There's a cool pan over Macross City though, and I like that. I talk about how much I like cartoon cities a
Oh
lot.
yeah.
Japanese cities are Japanese designed cities and cartoons are great. And this was really cool. There's a lot of cool signs and stuff in the background. Nothing that struck my fancy or anything, but it was a cool looking city, and I definitely dug that.
Yeah,
Something that I noticed, the beginning of this is kind of the end of Watchmen. An alien invasion stops all wars on Earth, and unites the Earth against the threat of aliens.
yeah, I
Yeah, no,
can't actually, I can't argue this.
I never thought about that, but that's a really good point. And that's something we didn't even touch on is that they do through a kind of a flashback, like some stills that there's been like a global civil war going on for years. That but yeah, so that the this ship crashing, Ass One crashing, puts it makes a global civil
Ass One crashing is a club hit, man.
war.
I want to hear the 12-inch mix of that one.
That's some definitely some Daft Punk would probably put out something like that. I'm down though. That'd be a good Basement Jacks maybe. Yeah, we get up to the bridge though. We kind of established we've got Captain Global. We got a lot of stock characters, and we're gonna touch more on this. We have a lot of stock characters in the show.
Man, I love me some Captain Global.
Yeah,
Captain
bro.
Global, I love the idea that this looks like a ship admiral with this like Russian accent is like he's piping everything, man. He's got the big overcoat. I love how he looks. I always have.
There's this joke on 30 Rock where one of Tracy Morgan's friends is Edward James Olmos, an Edward James Olmos impersonator, and that's what I call the captain.
He definitely has an Edward James Olmos a vibe, which is funny because I was telling you guys earlier that I was ill over the weekend, so I laid in bed yesterday and watched Blade Runner. I watched the original Blade Runner.
Around.
I haven't watched in total in a long time, and he was real good. He was real good in
Man,
that.
now I need Global to say, give him the speech where he's like, she's gonna die. Or how does the speech go? Where he talks to Harrison Ford's character about, how, she, something like, you live, but who does? I'm trying to think of that speech now.
Are you talking about the Roy
If
Batty
I hadn't
speech?
if I
No.
hadn't been zonked out on NyQuil, I'd probably
Edward James Olmos' speech where he's like, too
Oh,
bad
Edward
she's
James
like, she
Olmos.
won't live, but then again, who does? Man, I would love to have Global say that.
Hey.
Sorry, Lisa. Too bad you won't live, but then again, who does? And pull out his
Hey.
pipe and smoke it.
No, he's
I mean,
honestly,
not
it
allowed.
sounds like it could be dialogue from this show.
He does.
Yeah. We've got Lisa Hayes, or in the Japanese version, Misa Hayase. She's the mousy bridge officer, and Claudia Grant, who's scandalous. She's apparently in a relationship. She was up all night out with Commander Soker.
You know that I'm very into this sort of 80s time of entertainment of comics and cartoons where they were still for kids, but they were trying to put stuff in there to keep you on the hook into adulthood, little things for adults. And I'm sure as a kid, I would have really thought that about when she says partying. Like partying, that's something teenagers do.
Oh.
Partying is something that adults do. So, you know, that would have made me feel watching this, oh man, this isn't for me. This is for like 16-year-olds. This is cool.
Yeah. Oh, and so yeah, like Lisa is like she is like the mousiest looking character on the bridge, by the way.
Yeah.
She really
Yeah.
is. Like
Yeah.
Claudia looks, she looks cool. You know, she has that whole like the Foxy Brown thing going on with the afro and stuff. Like the Japanese artist for this got it really good for like a multicultural, multinational crew. Big
And
fan of that.
let's just go ahead and say Sammy's a drag.
Oh yeah.
Sammy makes everything worse. She doesn't want anybody to fight. She doesn't want anybody to smoke. She's no fun.
No.
No joke, man. Let Global smoke his pipe.
Right.
He's got an overcoat, man.
Just
He's very Captain Harlock adjacent. He should be able to do what he wants.
great.
That's a yeah, he's he has kind of Harlock. He has kind of a
He
Harlock vibe.
totally, I love the aesthetic, man. The Leiji Matsumoto aesthetic with that. Big fan of that.
Yeah, but yeah, so I was, yeah, Sammy's the drag. There's also Vanessa and Kim who make up those three are the bridge bunnies as
Right.
the known in the fandom.
That makes sense.
And their entire job basically for a long time is just to do things on the bridge of the ship. So
Right.
but we get a comical bit here with we finally see our protagonist here. We see Rick Hunter. Or Hikaru Ichijo in the Japanese version, showing up in a fan jet, a little and just bumbling around.
Just and immediately is a menace. Immediately is just screwing everything up.
And we had this discussion over text. I was like, man, the I was like, I look at this guy going like, he's like, yeah, I've got clearance from was it Commander Foger, Captain Foger? And they're like, oh yeah, come on in. He's flying through the airspace of this super secret, you know, fortress that they've been retrofitting for 10 years, and it's cool. He's got
Right.
clearance. He can do what he wants.
And then, I mean, essentially, this is the equivalent of just some guy in like a biplane decided, oh, I'm gonna get up there with the blues.
Yeah.
The angels are up there putting on a show. I'm just gonna go fly with them. Fly right through them when they're doing a bit.
And he's like, I'll do it better than them. Watch me.
Right. Well, that was the best part is
Menace.
he got cocky and decided to do like Rocky. He had like rockets in this jet, and he's like.
Right.
Yeah, he's doing the climbs and everything with these experimental fighters. So, while this is like they're unveiling these things for the first time. So, which is funny because like you would think that you know if they develop these things on Macross Island, people had probably seen them flying around at some point because they had to land
Right.
somewhere. Roy Fokker is the. Here we get another stock. We get two more stock characters here. We get we get the hotshot, brash young dude, and then his mentor, the aging ace, his mentor.
And
So
I
he, like, there's a funny thing with like Roy, like struggling with this microphone stand is like falling apart while he's
yeah.
screaming at
Gets to the
Rick.
bottom of it.
Yeah, it's just pretty funny.
I think the worst scene in We Will Rock You was ripped off from this. He invents the Freddie Mercury microphone in this scene.
He did.
Nice.
I thought of that. I thought of
I gotta tell you too, I don't think that hairdo is conducive for flying.
There's a lot of non-regulation hairdos in this. Like,
It's really in his eyes, man.
everybody's hair in this is in their
Yeah.
eyes. Like, I don't know how anybody can fly in this.
Because they're cool, man. They're better than you. That's
Yeah.
how. Oh, and so I you were talking about the Japanese names. I was most impressed. I was talking to Boo about this, and he's like, yeah, the actual the katakana of Roy Fokker is Roy Faka. That is not After Midnight on Guys by that. That is a complete pronunciation correctly.
Yeah.
That is a they completely like got his name right as for what it should have been, like the Japanese version of or the Americanized version of his name in Japanese. You know, like you know, Hikaru, Rick, you can get that kind of. I can see where you can get that. Or Misa Hayase, Lisa Hayes, I can see that. Roy is straight up Roy Fokker.
Right.
So,
Because he's named after the airplane company.
Well, dude, if you're gonna steal my thunder, go ahead. That's fine. Go. It's your
Yes.
episode now.
Anthony Fokker, the guy that went on to make the Fokker biplane, and also the Focke-Wulf, the fighter, the German fighter from World War II, was the same company that made those.
Okay,
The
I
same
didn't know any of
design
that.
reference.
That's
What's up?
fine. I didn't know any of that. That's cool.
I know we're not going to make any money on this anyway, but definitely there's no way that the AI is not going to get this section wrong and flag this video.
I'll do the AI script off of this and see what comes up.
But yes, well, I mean, if you want to go ahead and make the Dutch joke there, that it means breeder in Dutch. Yeah,
Well, Claudia sure knows that. Moving
that she
on.
does. That she oh, that she yeah. She found out. So while she was partying with Commander Fokker.
Partying.
Teenage.
Yes. So, yeah, they kind of he comes he lands and he does the whole thing. He lands on the airfield with this whole like demonstration thing going on, and Roy's like, "Hey man, good to see you." It is all pleasantries, even though he ruined everything for this big presentation. Everything's cool, and yeah, he mentioned that that Rick, was flying with with the air circus.
It was Rick's dad's,
Rick's dad's air circus.
yeah, Rick's dad's air circus.
And apparently, that's Roy was just flying with him too at one point. So,
Yeah, the backstory there is that Roy was like Rick's mentor,
yeah.
and he kind of thinks of him as his big brother. But he left to go to join the military during the global civil war. And he promised once he was done that he was going to come back, but apparently he didn't. He got caught up being a test pilot for this, and we get the reference to robotechnology here,
Right.
and which they don't really define that what it is yet, but we do get a robot vending machine that seems like an AI vending machine that's following this little kid around because the kid just says he wants a soda, so this machine is just like, oh, okay, here's a soda. He's trying to spit a soda out of this kid, so this works.
The kid's name was Jason, by the way. My notes is this: Jason wants a cola.
That's right. That's
Jason
right.
gets a cola whenever Jason wants.
I think Jason should get a cola.
But Lin says no. This we get our first introduction of Lin-Min-May. Or
Lin-Manmay was the main thing. I did not want Odell to catch me watching. Like she is so soap opera.
yeah, a 13-year-old pop queen on the ship. Yeah.
I can't really disagree with that. That's I don't think I would want any of my relatives to catch me watching anything with Lin-Manmay.
Right.
And we'll also get to I mean, it's kind of hard to not diverge into the difference between Robotech and Macross, because
Right.
but in Japan there were sequels to just this part of Robotech, and they like I've tried to watch those. I have really tried to watch those, but those shows, like, watch this and they go, the most interesting thing about this show is that girl singing. And so we're going to make four more shows about that.
Right.
Not about
Right.
cool transforming jets. That's what I'm here for. I'm here for giant aliens and transforming jets. But I get, like, every time I try to watch it, it's like a girl singing through a PA mounted on a giant spaceship. And I'm like,
Right.
I didn't want that.
Well, I mean
Like,
that's to and to not to take anything away from that's a pretty common thing with the Japanese culture with robot animes. They did that in some of the Gundam series. They did that in of course Macross Plus, Macross 7, all those
that's what I'm talking about. Macross Plus and Macross 7.
Oh,
It's
you
like
are? Okay.
that's what
Yeah,
I'm talking
yeah.
about. I'm talking about all the Macross sequels. It's like Macross 7, Macross Delta, and Macross Dynamite. They're all like every one of those things is just it's like just like 36 like episodes of Minmay
Right.
or whatever.
Though,
Where, like, can we get some Skull Squadron in here? But it's
yeah,
like the
I
very
gotta
next
say that.
level of the background characters, and it's just
Yeah.
like,
I
I'm not.
did really enjoy the Macross Plus music in that. That was really truly really good. If you're
I like Macross Plus is fine. Macross 2 was pretty too, but yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a whole other tangent. That's a whole six episode side thing.
There was another thing in here where obviously they were trying to appeal to maybe some teenage horn dogs, because for a second you think you're going to see an upskirt.
I was really surprised they didn't, but
Right.
I'm wondering, because I was waiting for it. I was like, but I
Right.
wondered if, because this came out in like 82 in Japan, I think 82 or
Right.
80, like that. So I wonder if that's as risque as it got for TV at that
Right.
point. Man, it was like, ooh, that's scandalous. Look at that girl. And like, it gets even weirder when you consider that she's like, canonically, I think at this point in the show, she's like 14.
Oh, she's
Right.
14. I thought she was 13, but okay.
Yeah,
Still.
I'm pretty sure she's
Doesn't really matter.
Robotech continuity. I'm pretty sure she's 14 at this point. And I think Rick is 16.
Oh, yeah, I
I
thought
think
he's
right.
15. Okay, so I was off a year in each.
I think I might be wrong on that, but I think that's the timeline.
It
But
still doesn't matter because there it's yeah, it's still as 14, whatever.
it's still weird. And but we get a shot. We finally get to see the antagonist here. We get a shot of the Zentradi. We get using these giant cool green spaceships. I like these guys.
I
There's
do too.
we get Britai and Exodor. Britai's a really cool looking guy with a giant metal plate over his face, and I like him. And then Exodor's like a little runt. So,
Right. I do. I always love Britai. He's just cool. The guy doing his voice. Of course, it's funny. Like listen, watching these, their voice is so digitized. It's kind of garbled. It's sitting there listening to what they're saying really, really closely. But yeah, I always love it because as the story goes on, we'll obviously get to that when we get to that. He just becomes a better and better character.
oh, he's a great character.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the Exodor is like his right hand man. He's like a little runt. He's a little scrawny guy. But in the Japanese continuity, it's noted that Exodor was the first Zentradi,
Oh.
and he's like a prototype for the Zentradi. But he's the oldest Zentradi out there. And but that's why he's not as physically adept as the rest of them, because they didn't know how to build them that. Like quite as big as they eventually did, which we'll get into that too, is how, where that came from. But yeah.
Yeah, tell him, Micronian.
But the mayor of Macross City says that the SDF-1 has been a great boost to the economy. And yeah, man, it sure has, because that's the whole reason that Macross City is there. Like, they built that city for that ship. Yes, it has been
Right.
quite a boost.
As in it created the economy.
Right.
No, I like that. That's kind of a cool little thing to put in there, because think about it, whenever they put up like a major Air Force, Army, Navy base in a city, the city kind of grows up around that base, because that's where all
Right.
the commerce is. It's the same thing here. It was nice little touch. I don't know, I enjoyed that.
But I mean, these people are all transplants. Like nobody lived there before.
Oh no, they're all engineers and stuff, or
They all came from somewhere else to build,
yeah.
and they built that city just to refurbish that ship. So it's like, it's like saying that, like, man, I'm glad the ocean's here. That's a real boost to the fishing economy. Like,
But
yeah, it
one thing
is.
that does, it is another thing that makes this feel a little more adult than the other things you would have been watching at that time. Like, nobody mentions the economy on G.I. Joe.
They did one time. I remember one. There was one episode where they mentioned the economy a lot, where they had to. It was one where like Cobra stole a bunch of G.I. Joe stuff, and they were blowing it up. And they were like, "Man, I can't believe we're having to blow this stuff up. You know how much that Skystriker costs?"
Oh, okay.
Like, oh, yeah. Or that one where that remember that one where the senator took over and cut their funding. He was like, "I
Oh, yeah, I do
like
remember. That's
Zartan
right.
and
That's a
these
good
guys."
point.
Like,
Well, I mean,
yeah.
there's an episode of Transformers called Money Is Everything. I mean, come on. This that that's yeah. Sunbow lightly touched on the economy.
Right.
Anyways, so yeah, obviously it's kind of, it makes it more like a lived in world, knowing how that worked. So I
Yeah, no,
appreciate the detail.
I just thought it was fun. It was funny.
Oh yeah, no, totally.
Yeah.
There's a really weird exposition here where like Captain Global is talking to somebody, and he's like, "Oh, the defense systems are coming online," and he's like, "Oh, you know what that means?" And then it goes, "Yeah, it means that this is happening." And like, I love those kinds of expositions where it's like somebody just says, like, "You know what that means," and then the other person actually answers that, but they both already know what it is. They're just telling you, the viewer, like what's happening.
Right.
Like, "Oh my God, they're opening the floodgates." Like, "You know what that means?" "Yes, it means we're gonna be flooded." Like, "Yes, it does. Thank you for you point that out. Why don't you go close the floodgates or
Right.
whatever?" Like, but essentially, what's going on is the SDF-1's systems are like powering up on their own. Like it's like these automated things, and then so it shoots the main gun, which this is awesome. This is so
Right.
cool. The animation is great, and it really shows how like this ship's whole the whole front of the 3/4 mile long ship is a gun, and it's so powerful that it's like boiling the ocean out when it goes over the ocean. This was neat. It hits these Zentradi scout ships, and it shows them like peeling the armor off of them and all this. It shows like the disintegration of the ships or whatever, instead of just like lasing out and doing a just doing like explosions or whatever.
Right.
This
Oh.
and at the end you see that it cut a giant canyon through like one of the mountains in Macross Island. This was really good. The animation of this, which I haven't really said much at all, but like the animation of this episode's actually for the time really good. Is
Agreed.
for TV anime is really really good.
Yeah, actually, if you this is where a lot of shows get their DNA for that kind of destruction in space. Exo Squad, which I've I'm a huge fan of. They did the same thing. Whenever ships would blow up, you see like rip down seams and they peel off and everything would kind of blow up. It
Right.
wasn't just like boom, it's done. I really like that. This idea of like there's a process to it, which is really cool. But I love seeing the whole main can, like the thing shifting and stuff. That was really cool. And I was like, I kind of it felt like it was the whole thing of like with Independence Day, the movie Independence Day, where like well, the ships are coming in orbit, so everything starts powering on. I like the idea that this was something that was like pre-programmed into the system as
Right.
the episode's called Booby Trap. It was kind of a cool effect. They're like, well, this is all happening, I guess. And this beam goes, boils the ocean, creates this canyon, and shoots off in space. So like, well, that just happened. So what do we do
Right.
now?
And the captain's laugh about it is pretty creepy when he realizes it's a booby trap.
He turns into the Joker. He's just like I was like Captain Global's dead, friend. You can call me the Joker. Like
Like it did seem like a villain's origin moment or something.
oh
Yes.
yeah.
Really
Really
good.
good.
I really wanted him to say though, finally a booby trap that traps boobies.
The same thing.
But he didn't do that. It
Oh
was
man.
detriment.
Oh yeah. The Zentradi close in even more. The Zentradi fleet gets even closer to Earth, and we get these cool like space carriers. These I think they call them armor platforms. They're like these like space aircraft carrier looking things. They're like launching tons and tons of fighters. I never knew that. Like I pause this a couple times, and like you can see like these are like again, like I don't mean to like harp on like 45-year-old animation, but like it was actually they put a lot of care into every cell in this. It was pretty cool.
I love the ships too. They're basically like cockpits with like a cannon. That's all it was. It just like flying through
Right.
space. It was like very utilitarian. But then again, if you're flying through space, you don't need stabilizers or anything. So yeah, they're just flying guns.
Yeah,
I
the
think
thing
I dig
what I
that.
really like from these battle scenes, and they do it, I'm pretty sure in every single episode, and I'm sure it was just a cost-cutting thing, but I think it's so awesome. That one scene where they'll just show all the explosions in space in the distance, I just loved it. That didn't look like anything else, and it made it feel real.
I noted that also. I really like that effect there, because it was like you said, it was probably like just a way to save time and money, but I think it worked really well, because it just kind of illustrated how far away that part of that battle was, where it was like you see missiles going and then you just see like these like plumes of light kind of coming up from it.
I think
It
that
was
was one
cool.
of the coolest things about Robotech, though, or Macross or whatever, is like the shooting of like a billion missiles. And it was just, they were just like, that was one of the signatures of the show. Panel opens up, it's like, whoosh, like 50 missiles come out of this panel, 50 out of this panel. All the Bataroids that are on the thing, they all shoot like tons of missiles. The Spartans, their things flip open, they shoot missiles. It is like this completely arbitrary number of missiles. You just know there's going to be a lot of explosions, and that was one of the best things about the show.
So, Britai turns into like a epic trash team. He is a hater for the generations here. He just goes on about these Micronians are idiots. They don't know how to use their weapons. They're ignorant of space war tactics. They're like And this dude is just like ripping Earth to shreds, like both literally and like verbally. He's, you know,
Right.
his fleet is just like blowing all these, you know, all up all the Earth defenders, and he's just like, he's just, he has absolute contempt for this. This reminds me of like back in the 80s in wrestling, like Magnificent Morocco had this gimmick where he would when he would go and like wrestle like a jobber, he would eat a sandwich. He took like a hoagie in the ring with him, and he
Oh,
would eat the
God.
sandwich while he was beating the guy up. That's kind of what it reminded me. It reminded me of just like a cocky 80s wrestling heel. This was cool.
And you know what, did we get to the Micronian thing yet, or just the fact that they're aliens with the ship?
And he calls them Micronians. I don't think they really illustrate what that means,
Yeah, I was
or
wondering.
I don't think they even really yet. I don't think they even illustrate how big the Zentradi are.
No, that's what I was
Yeah,
kind of
you
getting
don't
at.
know in this episode, which I
Yeah,
think is kind of cool.
because there's a reveal like later on, and when you see that, you're like, whoa, wait, yeah, that's cool. But yeah, so I guess that does kind of. Yeah, that does kind of add some tension there. But yeah, but these guys are, as a spoiler, these guys are like 50 feet tall, supposed to be like 50 feet tall.
Right.
Well, yeah, they're the size of a Veritech fighter.
Right.
And battle mode. Battleoid. Anyways, yeah. Robot mode. Yeah, the trash talk is great, and they're just like talking about the tactics and the weaponry they're using. It was just not great. And they just destroy the platforms. Like there's
Yeah, they
nothing.
take these things right out. Like,
What are these guys doing? And that's actually in that round when the SCF-1 starts to start up its whole process of shooting.
no, it shot the main gun like before
Okay,
this.
it did that. Okay.
That was the scout fleet that
Okay,
came.
that's right.
It took the scout fleet out, and then
A
the
lot of
rest of
things
them.
happen really fast. I'm trying to get the sequence
Yeah, a
right.
lot happens in not a lot of time there, but no, at this point, this when they order all the fighters to take off and all this,
That's
and
right.
so Roy had been showing Rick one of the Veritech trainers, so they're just like hanging out in this thing while the SCF-1 is shooting this massive gun that no one knew about, and they're just like hanging out. He's got the helmet on and everything, so he's like, maybe I should go and see what's going on. Roy's, maybe I should go and see what's going on. So he hops out, and he just leaves Rick. But Rick's just like sleeping in
Like, yeah, just hanging out
the
in this, expensive high-tech fighter.
classified high tech fighter. This is the most
Classified,
top secret thing on the face of the earth right
right?
now.
This guy's basically a carny, and they've
Yeah.
left him in this thing.
That's actually what I put in my notes. Like they're letting a carny fly the ship.
Roy goes and he goes to get in his fighter, but he sits there and just smiles. But I don't know if the animation like lagged or something like that, or they were just like
Right.
beating time. But he just kind of like he just gets in, puts his helmet on, he smiles for like 3 seconds, and you're like, man, you're that happy to be back flying combat missions again?
Right.
That's cool. Oh yeah, but yeah, so he takes off. So they take off from this aircraft carrier, though, from the Prometheus. That's pretty cool.
Oh yeah, there's also a little note of like Rick is just writing Roy about the fact he's killed a lot of people, like while he's been at the circus.
He's real anti-war and real anti-military, and that's the theme that's gonna kind of it's gonna keep coming up through this whole series, actually.
It's very much like that the Amuro from Gundam kind of archetype, young kid who's not really he's a reluctant, you know, hero kind of thing. He's the best one at it kind of thing,
Oh, they're
but
the same character. They're the same character.
they are the exact, well,
I mean,
the same archetype.
the Rick Hunter is in like every like
Yes.
American anime from 1975 to like 1995.
Well,
Okay.
yeah, I was trying to get to that, but okay. Carry on.
Like I said, stock characters, man.
Yeah, it
There's
is.
like these characters are very.
Rick had much better hair, but yes.
Rick had better hair than almost like any other anime character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, he's kind of like when you say anime hair, like I think
Oh,
for
yeah.
people our age, like that's who pops into your head first is Rick
Oh,
Hunter.
yeah. Yeah. So, because the thing is that looks like it could be like a hairdo. And not
Right.
like Dragon Ball Z hair. You can't like you can't have that. Like
Right.
that doesn't work like that. But like, okay, you got this weird wavy long hair that you part one way, and like
I mean, it looks like he kind of could have been in Echo and the Bunnymen or The Cure or something like that.
dude, these dudes all were from like new romantic bands. He's got
Yeah,
every one of
exactly.
these guys. Oh wow.
I mean, we
Yeah,
could
every
actually,
girl
we,
too.
yeah,
What's that?
we get all the anime hair though in this show, man. Like all the prototypical anime hair, blue hair coming up, and we get all the, the cap and glove with the kind of messy thing. It, like Rick is like one. Rick and Roy are those guys just go like, okay, and it's like perfect huge hair. Yeah,
Right.
that's it's just every one of these is like what we knew as anime hair from the show originally. Anyways, so
So,
yeah.
they're scrambling all these Veritech fighters, and Lisa Hayes just like gives an order for Rick to take off. He's like, why are you sitting on the runway? Take off, dude! Like you're armed. Get up in the sky, and they're like,
Doesn't ask for like a call sign or anything. Just like, hey, you're a warm
BF-102.
body in that cockpit. Let's go make some war.
And this was a trainer. It was a trainer.
Yeah, right.
VF-102, get up there. Okay.
And then when he gets up there, everybody kind of just thinks it's fun. It's just good fun. Oh, this guy who's not in the military is in our military death machine flying around. Let's just see what happens.
Dude, really so funny. He's like, oh, hey, Rick, you're up here? All right. Okay, watch out. Yeah, like, oh, you're up here? Like, yeah, a civilian in a classified, like a
Right.
classified experimental fighter. Like, yeah, and like, oh, yeah, man, yeah, Rick, you'll just get used to it. So we have the three of us have a friend who I can't say his name because of reasons. He's a pilot. He's a drone pilot in the Air Force, and he runs top secret missions. And this would essentially is like us showing up to see him at work and being like, oh hey man, I took one of your drones too. So let's go blow up the
Exactly.
Sheik. And like. And like, oh, okay, well, just yeah, it's fine. You get used to it. It's just like playing, you play a lot of I don't know, whatever flight simulator, whatever video game I was trying to think of.
It's just like it, man. Just here's the guns, here's the missiles, have fun.
Well, I mean, it's more like, oh wow, World War III just broke out. Here's the gun, here's the missiles. Let's have some fun. Like,
These guys have no clue what they're fighting.
right.
Like it's just from space. Just came down. No,
There's definitely a real devil may care attitude amongst these guys.
but this is some Iron Eagle business going on here.
It is. That's a great way to put it.
I love Iron Eagle. So it's definitely like, oh well, he stole that ship. So cool, man. All right, Mr. Iron Eagle, sir. Like,
None
all
of
right.
these guys have a tape deck velcroed to their leg, though. That
Unfortunately, that's the most anime thing you can do,
I
really.
know.
they did it in Thunderbolt. Gundam Thunderbolt had a freaking jazz tape deck up on his dash.
So we get actually a pretty cool battle here. The thing with the battles in this and in like most all of Robotech is they move so fast. But what's funny is you can sit there and freeze frame, like frame by frame, and you're like, oh, like they didn't cheap out or anywhere. Like in this episode, we're gonna get to some rough ones later on. But yeah, there's th this was pretty impressive for like I mean, there's like stuff they were just drawing in stuff that you would never see. Like, hey, this one half of a cell. We're gonna put this ship here that you're never gonna see again in the series. But it.
Yeah, if you're going to call something like Mercurial, this is definitely that. I mean, because there's so much in each scene.
Yeah.
And it pays off because your eye automatically will fill in the blanks, but you don't have to. Like you said, you can stop a frame of this, and there's so much going on in the city, especially with like we get to a Rick's in the city. There's so much going on around him, constantly people and
Right.
all kinds of stuff. That it was pretty impressive.
Yeah. Rick gets shot down. Rick gets hit, and he's falling. His controls are locked up. And from the bridge, Lisa tells him to go into configuration B. And here's where we get the cool big reveal here, where his fake F-14 transforms into a giant robot, and he crashes.
And destroys like seven buildings.
And he takes out so many. He's a man of steel level of irresponsible with this
Right,
thing.
right. We have no idea if there were all of those buildings could have been daycares. Every
Maybe
single one of them.
everybody was probably at the air show, though, I think.
That's a good point. That's a good
Yeah.
point.
Well, they don't have a home to go to at home now. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Well,
Yeah, so but
it's about to
they
get worse,
Oh, I know, yeah. And but okay, the thing is, I love how the conversion of this works. There are three levers in the cockpit. This thing's like idiot proof.
right.
G, B, what was the other one? Like V or F?
It's F, G, and B. It's a
F,
F
G, and B.
for fighter.
G for Gerwalt.
Well,
Okay.
technically,
Actually,
in the American version, in the English version, a G stands for guardian, is a guardian mode, which is like a halfway mode. It's basically the jet with like the on jet fire, like the legs would come down and the arms would
yeah,
come out.
right.
And then a B is for battaloid or bashroid, however you want to, but also called soldier mode in some translations, even though the lever's called is B.
So let me ask you, Ed. So since you have played so much RPG stuff with this, what is the advantage of Guardian or Gerwalk mode?
You can hover in Guardian or Gerwalk mode. You can fly slower. You have a the effective like the minimum speed is basically like 1 mile an hour. You can go as
Well,
fast or
okay. I think you also shoot like tons of missiles, like a really cool missile scene or something too.
you can do that too, but you can actually shoot missiles from Battaloid mode.
Okay. Well,
And here's some deep lore. Gerwalk is actually an acronym. I thought it was just a nonsense word they made up for it, but Gerwalk actually stands for Ground Effective Reinforcement of Winged Armament with Locomotive Knee Joint.
wow. Is that one of the things where they made up a word and then just like we can make something to go all these words these letters can mean something. Let's find out.
I have no idea. I do know that the reason that it exists in the first place is because when they were developing the show and they were working with Bandai to make the original toy for it. So we're a Transformers podcast here, so I would assume that most of our listeners know about the original like toy for Jetfire. So that was the original toy for Robotech or for Macross. So, but the legs like ratchet into place. So the prototype for the toy, they did not ratchet into place. So when they were showing it off, one guy picked it up and the legs like popped down automatically. They just swung free. And they locked it, and so the guy set it down, and I was like, "That's really cool. We should do something with that."
Right.
That was why Guardian mode
Oh, that's
was
cool.
thing into the
Little whoopsie doodle to
and then
get in.
there were subsequent animes that where that was the transformation period. Specifically in Southern Cross, and then in Orgus, that was how things transformed. It was just into Gerwalk. But that was the episode. That was the whole episode.
Yeah, so yeah, Rick destroys half the city and all the daycare centers. Yeah, 16-year-old devastates the town. I'm sure it'll get better after this.
Well, this is really a third of a story because this is like a three-part story, right? Is it two or three for the first story?
What do you mean?
I mean, we're still in this battle in the next episode.
Oh yeah. I think this first part, I think goes for three episodes. I think it goes to I think Spacefold, I think is the one where it kind of kicks off, but or it kind of ends that first little intro thing. But here's a kind of a like a cool thing, and I'll get to this when I talk about how I feel about this episode, but there was another episode that actually aired first before this. There was a thing called Codename Robotech that was like a 90-minute thing that was it was like a capsule episode where they just took they take they it was like a clip episode where they just like put a bunch of cool stuff in it. And so like when you sat down and watched this thing for the first time, you're like, oh cool, look at all these cool robots and all this stuff, because like you, like they don't they scratch the surface barely of what is going on in this episode. So
Yeah, no, totally.
so yeah, but yeah, well, yeah, but yeah, where are you guys at with that? How do we feel about Booby Trap?
No, let's go in the reverse order. I usually go last, man. Once again, I love the opening theme that kind of got me right into it. It's infinitely better than the original. Like I'll say season two is different, but the original Transformers theme for the opening for season one, not my favorite. This one is just like infinitely better. The music's better. The animation's really cool. Like the whole like thrown right in the middle of everything. In the first episode, it's kind of fun. You're meeting the characters, and it's a typical, big anime show where you're learning all the main characters just by them interacting with each other. It's typical because this is where a lot of that got its DNA. So this
Right.
is really the one that like shape a lot of how other shows are started off. And you're thrown right into the thick of things. And there's like, once again, you have your Luke Skywalker slash Amuro slash your young, circus air circus fighter guy who's anti-war get thrown into a war machine and thrown in the middle of this new war. All that's really cool. It all worked really well, and it's a fun show. Besides my viewing of Lin-Manmay, everything was great. She's going to be the my lack of enthusiasm as the show progresses. But yeah, man, it's cool. Roy Fokker is always just cool, without a doubt. He is the cool older fighter pilot who has gray hair, and who dates the really cool chick on the bridge. That's Roy Fokker. Everything about the show though is great. You get to see transformations. I mean, what else can you want as a kid or as an adult? That's just the cool thing. Like, man, I definitely give this thing a good, starting off, you got to give it a good 4 vending machine colas out of 5.
Right. Definitely this episode doesn't have a lot of what I like about the show, which is there isn't a lot of the real soapy melodrama here yet. That will come later. But man, it sure is cool to look at. And it's fun watching Rick Hunter be a menace. One thing we didn't mention, there's some weird interlude in it where Rick is remembering him and Roy's time at the flying circus or whatever, and it feels almost French. Like it feels like
Does.
I remember I read somewhere somebody said that in American movies, teen rebels run away from home. In French movies, teen rebels run away from home and join the circus. And I have no idea if that's true. I just think that sounds funny. So I'm going to give this right down the middle. I'm going to give it 3 French interludes.
All right. Yeah, I don't know that this is really the I don't know it was a good episode. It's and
Right.
like and I like I love this show and like I know where it's going, but I don't know that like my kid brain here, I don't know that this would have been the best. Like I don't know that I would have seen this and then made this like appointment viewing the next day.
Right.
I mean, if I was home, I probably would have watched it again just to see what was going on. But I just like, but I mean, on the other hand, it's very kinetic and there's a lot going on, and also it's very obviously Japanese. And I like I've talked before about how like when you were a kid in the 80s, Japan was a magical wonderland of
Right.
stuff. It's like anything cool came from anything that came from Japan was automatically cooler than anything else. It's like modern, like if you ever. If you follow like pro wrestling and you read like Dave Meltzer's reviews, it's like if something happened in the Tokyo Dome, it's a better match than if it happened in Madison Square Garden.
Right.
But I mean, I really enjoy it. I mean, I liked it, but I don't know that I would have. I don't know that it would have like gotten the hooks in me. I think that maybe seeing Codename Robotech would have probably gotten me more. But I mean, I thought it was fine. I'd give it 3.5 Gerwalks out of 5 as a kid. As an adult, like knowing how much I love the show and like my personal history with it and all that, and once I finally got to see this episode, I was just like, oh man, this is great. And I think it's actually aged really well. We talked about there's times in Transformers where there's animation that's rough. It's just not good animation. And there's
Right.
times in this where there's episodes in this where it's it, you know, they farmed out some animation later on. And And sadly, it's in some great episodes. But here, I think they really kind of, as far as the actual technical animation goes, I think they really put their best foot forward. But there's a lot of times where, like, because this is essentially a serial drama, right? This is basically like a modern like HBO style show where there's continuity from episode to episode to episode, and I think this might be the first cartoon that had that. The first like thing marketed to kids that had that.
Definitely the first one we got here.
That's what I'm sure there was something in Japan or somewhere else that did that, but I'm pretty sure that this was the first like and I don't mean like a two-parter or or like G.I. Joe where they'd split the movie into five episodes and show that or I mean like this is straight up like it has a beginning, a middle, and it has a definite end. And I don't but that said though, as an adult I see this and like I don't think it's rough. I think it's just it, like I think they probably could have focused on, I don't know. I think they probably could have given you a little bit more in this, but I thought it was good, and like I'm definitely excited to watch more of it. So Adult B has to go four. Oh, dude, you like Rosettes out of five?
I think it's because my mind's really like weighted on I know it's coming, so it's hard to put that toothpaste back in the tube when you already know it's happening. So I love origin story episodes. So that's I think that's why I saw this one so favorably. I can't wait till we have Vermillion Squad and all that.
Well,
But
also, I think something sometimes, I don't know if kids today are like this, but me as a kid, what I didn't know was just as important as what I did know, because that's what brought me back. My first issue of the X-Men was like the second to the last part of the Mutant Massacre, and I knew nothing going on in that, but I desperately wanted to know. And I think that's probably how kid me would have felt about this episode too.
yeah, definitely. So yeah, I mean, honestly, it's a good way to start. It feels like a lot of other anime, serial animes, because this is how serial animes got its real start. So I've always had to tell myself like, well, it kind of feels like a derivative of other things. Like, oh wait, no, they're all derivative of this. Yeah, I mean, even though like you had like Go Lion, the original Voltron was very serialized, but they broke it up and changed everything around when they brought it as Voltron. So you really can't even use that or it defended that was like G-Force or any of those things. They were made so American kids would like them better because we didn't like serialized shows, according to somebody who was wrong, very wrong. So yeah. That cool man. I can't wait to get into more of this. I know you're excited, Ed. We had talked about doing this a long time ago, and you reminded me, like, dude, let's just do it now.
Yeah,
So,
I mean, it seemed like I said, it seemed like as good a time as any to go into it, and yeah, especially with us being at a stopping point, trying to figure out how we're gonna tackle Transformers the movie, and that's the big barrier to getting into season three. So,
yeah, there's a
anyway,
few different methods we can do it, but wait and hear back on that right now. And until that time, let's get this going. And thank everyone for being here. Like, follow. We've now branched loose to another 80s pillar. Not only a little the comic stuff, not only the original Transformers, not even all the other things that come with being an 80s kid, but now the infinitely cool Robotech. So. Guys, thanks for being here. Y'all take it easy this week. Ed, I don't know how do we even take this out this week, man.
Well, in addition, when we first started, Transformers, I just picked random quotes and from Transformers and dropped them. So I'll just drop a I'll drop a random quote from Robotech though. So and I mean, next week, if one of you guys wants to pick this up, that'd be cool too. But I'm gonna go with a very apt one, which is we'll go to the stars and beyond.
That sounds very dreamlike. I like that. The very
Sounds like
unlike.
maybe Disney owes them a check.
All right, y'all take it easy. Have a great week. Talk to you later. Bye.